Hi, I'm Brad, and welcome to Queer Writers of Crime. Richard Lippez died a few days ago on March 16, 2022. We know him best by his pen name, Richard Stevenson, author of the Donald Strachey mystery series, which he began with Death Trick in 1981. This is sad news for many of us. He was a kind man and an inspiration to me. He was supposed to be a guest on this podcast this month. He bowed out of recording in February because the chemo was making him ill. We agreed to touch base early this month, and he was certain he'd feel better. He had a positive attitude. He would work past the disease, which should be no surprise to anyone who knew him. When I emailed Dick to see if he was ready, the response he gave was his diagnosis didn't look good. However, I didn't think he'd be taken so soon. Lucky for us, he has two books yet to be released. Knock Off the Hat, a Clifford Waterman gay Philly mystery, will be released on April 26, 2022. The publisher is Amblin Press, where his good friend Michael Nava is managing editor. Leave it to Dick to start a new series at 83 years old. He was excited about the novel and to work with Michael. In addition, Requeered Tales is publishing the 14th and final Donald Strachey mystery, Chasing Rembrandt, in the fall of 2022. Both novels are now available for pre-order. Richard's zest for life never faltered. The last email he sent me began with, "Brad, oh dear, my cancer situation seems to be worsening a lot. Phooey, to put it mildly." He ended his message with, "I'm 83 and this is okay. I've been lucky in too many ways to count." Because I was unable to interview Dick again, I offer you this encore edition of when he was my guest in August 2020. You'll find a link in the show notes to an obituary written by his son Zach for the Berkshire Eagle, for which Dick was the editor for many years. Thank you, Dick, for the great novels you've left us. It was an honor to know you.
It's time to put on your sleuthing cap, feel nail-biting dread, and face heart-racing fear. This is Queer Writers of Crime, where you'll get book recommendations and hear interviews with LGBTQ authors of mystery, suspense, and thriller novels. Here's your host, Brad Shree.
Richard, it's a pleasure to have you on Gay Mystery Podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I've got to tell you, your bio is fascinating, but we're not going to talk about you right away. We're going to start off with the man himself, Donald Strachey. The latest Strachey novel, Killer Reunion, is the 16th in the series. Tell us about him. Who is Donald Strachey?
He's somebody who sprung into my hot little brain in 1979 and 80 when I thought that there was a need for a gay mystery private eye who was going to be in tune with the zeitgeist of the late 70s, which was gay liberation, political liberation, and a rejection of the way, in particular, in which gay people had been portrayed in fiction, and especially genre fiction, and particularly mysteries up to that point, which was that we were always pathetic victims, and often were expected to commit suicide if we weren't murdered. And we were a pretty sorry lot in mysteries up until that time, except, of course, for Joseph Hansen's Dave Brandstetter mysteries, which really broke that old mold. But his were pretty solemn, and I wanted to create a character that was more reflective of the high spirits of the late 70s and early 80s. And so I made up Strachey. I read Gregory MacDonald, where I got some of the likeness of the social comedy. And I read Raymond Chandler. If you read Death Trick, the first novel in the Strachey series, you'll see that the opening scene, as a friend pointed out, I didn't even realize it at the time, is almost a plagiarism of the opening scene of The Big Sleep. So Strachey served that purpose in gay lit for me. And also, he was a kind of alter ego for me and lived a life that I like to fantasize about when I was writing the books.
Well, you mentioned to me that you have a plan for a pandemic era Strachey novel to release next year. It's a big maybe.
That's the plan.
That's the plan. I know how that goes. The reason I brought it up is next year is the 40th anniversary of the series. And right. I'm curious about the timeline over those 40 years. How much time has passed in Strachey's life?
Well, not very much. A number of readers have pointed this out. I made him my age when the book came out, which was a little past 40. And the idea was that Strachey and his boyfriend from the very beginning, Timothy Callahan, would age at the same rate that I aged. But my editor at St. Martin's at the time, Michael Denany, was very clear. He said, no, your readers are not going to want to read about some old fart detective. And so you can't age these guys. So I didn't. And in the most recent book, Killer Reunion, there's just a passing mention that almost 40 years later, they're only in their mid-50s. So eventually, I think I will. I'm 81 myself, and I know what aging looks like. I've been, pretty lucky so far, but there's always next week. And I think eventually I will have them have my characters face some of the difficulties and pleasures of aging. But for the moment, they're still in their sprightly mid-50s.
Made it a little more real than Sue Grafton did. Her whole series, A through Y, Kinsey Milhone, or Milhorn, I can never remember her name exactly.
Right.
Her character only aged, like, I think, 3 years over that whole period.
I know.
That's a lot of detective work in a very short amount of time.
It sure is. I haven't quite managed to come up with that much chutzpah as a writer.
Well, in 1981, when Death Trick came out, Donald and his partner Timothy Callahan, I found this very interesting when I read the novel, that they aren't strictly monogamous, which some readers were surprised of. I read in some of the reviews. But I believe it was true to the era. How has their relationship changed and developed over that time?
They did, as a couple, struggle over the whole question of monogamy or not in the early books. And then later on, as they became more secure with each other, it just wasn't an issue anymore. There wasn't much that went on outside the relationship, although in one of the books, The $38 Million Smile, which is set in Thailand, there's some really interesting scenes where they visit a gay bathhouse in Bangkok. But for the most part, as they have aged into their their 50s, it just isn't a big deal anymore. It just doesn't come up as an issue. It's one of those issues that every gay couple thinks about, talks about, and has rules about. And they've managed to work it out very comfortably over the years. It's just not a big deal.
Donald and Timothy spent some time in Bangkok, and I know you and Joe frequently go to Bangkok. Is it every year that you go?
We have gone every year, almost every year, for the last 14 years, for 2 or 3 or 4 months, and we have friends there, and we love Thailand and love Bangkok, and it's just one of the most wonderful places in the world, and it looks as though we won't be going this coming winter because of the virus. First of all, the Thais, I'm sure, will not let us in. They are not letting anybody in, and Americans in particular are practically lepers in the world now because of the way the virus has been mishandled here. So I think we won't be going this year, but I hope we'll be able to go the following year. It's a great place to be gay. Thais are pretty comfortable with it. There are some old Chinese Thai families that are more conservative, but by and large, the Thais pretty easygoing people in most areas of life. The society works. People get their work done, but they have a belief in the importance of sanuk, is the Thai word, which means fun, but it doesn't mean just fun, but it means get up in the morning and do what you need to do and enjoy it as thoroughly as possible with other people. So that's what draws us there. Plus, of course, the climate in the winter. The New England winters are not so great as some of your listeners will know.
I grew up in Michigan. I remember them well, and I'm very glad to be in Los Angeles.
I'll bet.
Well, we're going to talk more about you, Richard, but I wanted to bring up that you've had the honor of being a writer of gay fiction who's had stories were adapted for film on Here TV. It was four of the Donald Strachey novels. Is that correct?
That's right. Four of them were filmed. This was about 8 to 10 years ago, and they're available. You can look them up and get hold of them, or even find them on Here TV is the entity on which they appeared. It's a rather small, limited, obscure cable channel that doesn't appear on many systems. And they did four. They did Third Man Out, Ice Blues, Shock to the System, and one other one whose name escapes me. It was a mixed experience for me. The great Lawrence Block said that when any of your books are filmed, you can't really expect them, once they appear on the screen, to be your book. The whole vocabulary, the whole structure, the whole way of putting a narrative together is just too different. But what you can hope for is that they will be any good. And of the four that were done, I would say one was good enough, and two were not good at all. And one I have not looked at, Ice Blues. It's one of my favorite books in the series. And some friends said, don't look, it's just so awful. And other friends said, oh, it's really the best of the four. So I'm torn about that. The one thing I will say is that even though the scripts were awful, I had nothing to do with it. They kept me at a long arm's length. The scripts were awful, and a lot of other things were awful. They looked as though they'd been made for about $1.85 or something. But Chad Allen, as Strachey, was really just perfect. He's not the Strachey in my head, but he's a kind of now alternative Strachey that I sometimes see in my head when I'm writing because he was so good and brought such talent and humanity and intelligence to the role. So I was lucky that happened. I didn't make much money. They were a bunch of cheapskates, that company. But it sold some books. It introduced the books to a whole new generation of readers. And overall, I'm glad it happened.
Yeah, Lawrence Block, who is one of my absolute favorite two writers, his character, Bernie Rodenbaugh in the Burglar series, was made into a movie called Burglar, and they changed Bernie into Bernice, and it starred Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh.
And he said, I don't know why they did it, but I'm not a screenwriter. I don't make movies. I write books.
Raymond Chandler, somebody said to Raymond Chandler, isn't it awful, Mr. Chandler, what Hollywood has done with your books? And he said, Hollywood didn't do anything to my books. They're right up there on the shelf. So that's basically a good way of looking at it.
That is a good way to look at it. And I do want to let people know, and yourself know, I guess it is on Here TV, which is not in a lot of markets. But I also found it on YouTube, and it's not free on YouTube. You have to pay extra for it.
Oh.
But if anybody wants to see the movies, they're there.
Yeah, I would say the one to watch, if you're going to watch any, is the first one, Third Man Out. The book, I think, is one of the best in the series, and the movie was pretty good, too. It was the script for that one was written by a friend, Mark Saltzman, and he did a great job.
And we're going to talk more about you now. And in the intro, I said that you left grad school in 1962 and worked in the Peace Corps for 5 years. But you said the first 2 years were teaching English in Ethiopia, and that was the best thing you ever did. Do tell.
Absolutely. Oh, sure. Yeah, I was in grad school at Penn State, and I always wanted to write, but you know, you can't just announce to the world that you're a writer and get a job doing that. And I sort of thought I might like to teach too, but the thing I was feeling most severely was the need to be connected to the larger world. I had volunteered for JFK when he ran for president as a college student. I went door to door and, you know, was sort of caught up in the whole idea of the United States connecting with the larger world in some, you know, useful and good way. And I wasn't sure that I had the skills that were needed, but I went out and the recruiter came to Penn State and I said, "Do you need English teachers?" And she said, "Oh, yes." And so less than a year later, I found myself in rural Ethiopia, and it was great. It was hard. It was complicated. But it did what I wanted it to do, which was to make me feel as though I was doing something useful, and at the same time contributing to my own education of the world and of the people of the world. And it was terrific. And then after 2 years, I was very lucky to get a job back operating out of Peace Corps headquarters in Washington as a program evaluator, which meant I traveled around the world throughout Africa and Asia, peering over the shoulders of other Peace Corps volunteers to see what they were doing and how they were doing and what they thought about what they were doing, and then trying to find ways to improve the programming and recruiting and training and so forth. So that was my, you know, my formal education, I do value. I had some wonderful teachers over the years, but my Peace Corps experience was my greatest education. And I gave Timmy in the Strachey books a Peace Corps background. He was in the Peace Corps in India, which is one of the countries that I visited when I was an evaluator. So it's been one of the central and enduring good things in my life.
Sounds like an awesome opportunity. I'm glad you took advantage of it.
Yeah.
Now it's time for awkward questions that authors get.
Oh.
I didn't warn you about this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to spin a wheel. And when it's done, we're going to get a question that sometimes authors get that are, they can be just plain awkward. They may take us aback. And sometimes they may be downright rude. So we'll
rudeness,
see what you...
I have some experience with rudeness. I hope I don't have to be rude back.
Oh, no. We'll see. We'll see if you get a rude one.
Okay.
I sit here and I'm going to spin the wheel. Okay. Your question, I can safely say, is not a rude one.
I'm relieved.
In fact, it's not too hard. The question is, why don't you get a real job?
That's a good one. The answer is too late now. I did have a real job. My Peace Corps jobs were real jobs. And when I ran the Community Action Agency in Pittsfield, Massachusetts in the late 60s, that was a real, real job. But since then, I've been lucky to have survived as a freelancer. You know, now I'm on Social Security, and it's worked out okay. So too late for that. I went to a high school reunion in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania several years ago, and one of my classmates from the class of 1956 asked me if I was retired, and I said, "From what?" and luckily, I don't feel any need to retire from whatever it is I've been doing all these years. I still have my marbles and some energy, and plan to keep at it. No real job for me.
Well, I think many of your jobs were real jobs, including writing itself. And you've done that well over the years.
Well, I've been lucky enough to get away with it. You know, I arrived on the gay mystery scene at just the right time in the early 80s when there was a readership and a demand, and publishers, mainstream publishers, were, paying decent money. And, now it's all changed and everybody's struggling and the market is fragmented and all that. So I really feel extremely lucky to have been there at just the right time. And my heart goes out to people who are struggling to do it. Now, they're the ones that have to get real jobs. Sorry.
I'm sure you were very close to Donald Strachey after all these years. But is there a reason you haven't written another series during your career?
Well, funny you should mention that. I actually am starting in my advanced state of decomposition another series. I have written a private eye novel with a private eye, Clifford Waterman, set in Philadelphia in 1947. And I finished it not too long ago, and I'm now, it's sort of out there, and we'll see what happens. I mean, out there being looked at by publishers and agents and people like that. So we'll see how that goes. I had a gay uncle who lived in Philadelphia in that era, and he never came out to the family. And I only learned about his being gay later on, and I got very curious about his life in Philadelphia in the 1930s and 40s and 50s. And so I did a lot of research and then was impelled to write a mystery set in that time and place, partly because it just seemed like a great situation for a noirish private eye story, what with the corrupt and brutal police department and the corrupt court system and the homophobia in hiring and all the rest of it. It seemed just wanting a gay private eye to show up in that setting. And he's not like Strachey at all, and he couldn't be, because Strachey's head is in the late 70s, and this guy's head really is in the late 40s, and gay people's heads at that time were very different. So he struggles, Cliff Waterman struggles with being a rational man in an irrational homophobic place. And I'm hopeful about that getting out into the world in the coming year or so. We'll see.
Yeah, that'll definitely be interesting. Totally different feel to it, I'm sure. It was a dangerous time.
Yep. Yep.
Always looking over their shoulder.
The research was interesting. I was very lucky. A guy named Mark Stein wrote a book that came out maybe 20, 25 years ago for Temple University Press called City of Sisterly and Brotherly Loves, Gay Philadelphia, 1940 to 1972, something like that. And it was full of the, he did interviews, so it was full of the voices of the time, of people remembering what it was like. And it was so useful. And then I did other research too, and really got into the feeling and the atmospherics of the time. So I'm hopeful about that. And it was something that I was apprehensive about starting. I thought, oh, if I start this, is it just going to sound exactly like Strachey? And it didn't. You know, the situation had other requirements, and I observed them. So anyway, here's hoping.
I look forward to it. So in Killer Reunion, Donald and Timothy have to contend with a family reunion. It's Timothy's family, I believe. And it's a politically outspoken relatives that they're dealing with. Something tells me today's political climate inspired much of that fighting in the novel.
Well, you're very keen. I actually attended a family reunion in Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania, a couple of years ago. And all the members of my family that I know of are, liberal Democrats. And some remote cousins that we had never been in touch with. Somebody discovered them in Cincinnati, connected with the family and wanted to come to the reunion. And they did. And it turned out they were Trump supporters, and it was very awkward. And anyway, that got me to thinking that what if there's a family reunion? And I think more typically, there are families that are more evenly divided. And I thought, well, what if there's a family reunion where the Trump people and the anti-Trump people really get into it, and there's a murder? And is the murder really just political, or is there old family stuff going on here, or what's it about? And I came up with a plot, and it was great fun to write. It was set in a country inn where the family gets together in the Berkshires, where I live, of Western Massachusetts. And it's called Killer Reunion. And it's the most recent book in the series. And it's fun, I think.
I'll have a link to the book in the show notes so people can take a look at it.
Oh, thank you.
Have you been politically active over the years?
We have actually, been serious about it. And we were deeply involved in Berkshire Stonewall Community Coalition for many years, especially in the gay marriage battles in Massachusetts, which became highly politicized. And we won that. And we've also volunteered for John Kerry and Obama. And last year, or 3 years ago, we went to New Hampshire for Hillary. Trump said, there are all those illegals being bussed into New Hampshire to vote. Well, they weren't going up there to vote. They were people like us who were going up in buses to knock on doors. And this year, we'll do it again. need I say more? All our lives depend on it.
It's going to be a busy year for a lot of us, that's for sure.
Yep.
What do you find is the hardest thing about writing?
Oh, boy. Getting started, there's that terrifying blank page when you think, oh, I don't remember how to do this. That first page, and you think, oh, it's as though I've never done this before. And that's the hardest part. Once I get going, it's not hard. But having some kind of clear or semi-clear idea of how to start is the hardest part for me. You mentioned earlier that I was working on, you might even have said, a new Strachey book set in the pandemic era. And I have to say that all I have is a bunch of little slips of notes on the backs of Dunkin' Donuts receipts and things like that, and it's that time again when you have to look at the empty now computer screen and put something on it. But I think I can.
Well, I generally don't get into the mechanics of writing. I'm not sure all the readers are interested in that, and it generally comes out the same. But I am really curious with you. Do you outline?
Very rough outline, very sketchy outline, just enough to get me going. And I might or might not stick with what I have outlined. A few times I have just sort of plunged in. I had a good first page or situation, a bunch of characters. And so I just plunged in and then rewrote as I went along. But I've done it various ways. And I know different writers are very meticulous in the way they do outlines. And then there are people who just, meander around and then tidy up afterwards. And I've done it both ways. And I do whatever works at the time.
Yeah, when new writers ask me about should you outline or not, I'm like, Stephen King does an outline and J.K. Rowling does. They both seem to do even pretty well for themselves. So you decide for yourself.
Yep, you do what works.
So before I let you go, I want to ask, you've spent 40 years in the gay mystery genre. How do you view the future of the genre?
Well, it seems to be very healthy. Everybody's doing it. I mean, I don't think anybody's making much money at it these days, but with small publishers struggling along and people self-publishing, and occasionally one of the mainstream publishers puts something out, but it's very rare now. But, it seems very healthy. It's a kind of an embarrassment of riches, really. The only problem is, I guess, that people do have to keep their day jobs. That's a shame. But mysteries generally, the whole genre, I think, has a great future. It's one of the genres that seems to have a sizable following through every era, through thick and thin. And there will always be gay, lesbian, bi, queer people who want to read about people like themselves. So I'm optimistic about it happening and hope that people can find other ways to survive.
I'm glad you see a bright future in that. I do too as well, for basically the same reasons that you gave. So again, want to let people know that I'll have a link in the show notes to Killer Reunion, your latest Donald Strachey novel. And I want to thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Richard.
It's been my pleasure, Brad, and thank you. And good luck with your books. I told you I just read A Body in a Bathhouse and enjoyed it a lot and recommended highly. It's a good mystery, and it also... as I mentioned to you, I think of my own books as being social comedies as much as mysteries, and I thought that yours had a lot of those elements, Body in a Bathhouse did, so congratulations to you.
Well, thank you, and the $20 will be in the mail next week.
Oh, 20? You're earlier, you said $27.50.
Well, shipping charge.
Okay.
And taxing.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You can get more information about episodes, plus scoops on book releases and promotions by LGBTQ crime authors each and every week. Simply head over to queerwritersofcrime.com and sign up for the newsletter. If you wait until this episode is over, you may forget, so Brad made it easy and put the link right here in the show notes. Need a little nudge? Click it now and you'll also get a free ebook by one of a select group of outstanding authors. That makes not subscribing just plain silly. It's all yours at queerwritersofcrime.com.